everyone, and welcome to this edition of Next Witness, Please. We're a podcast that decodes legal jargon and procedures and puts them into everyday terms for regular folks. Our goal is to build public understanding of the law and our legal systems. I'm retired Judge Tom Hansen, and normally I'm joined by my co-host, retired Judge Gail Williams Byers, but she's out today and will not be joining us. Instead, however, we have a very special guest, Dr. Stephen A. Goldman. Dr. Goldman is a psychiatrist, an author, and a historian. He also spent a number of years at the FDA as a medical product safety and risk management expert and regulator. Today, we'll talk about the importance of federal regulation and the nonpartisan civil service in the wake of President Trump's executive orders targeting federal workers. Dr. Goldman, as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you, and welcome to Next Witness, Please.
As always, a pleasure to talk with you, Tom.
Let's start off with some facts. In talking, you and I, in preparing for our discussion today, you shared some statistics with me from a 2024 report that said only 23% of Americans trust the federal government, compared with 63% who do not. 31% believe the federal government has a positive impact on the states, only 31%. But 91% believe having a competent civil service is important for a strong American democracy. Let me say that again. 91% believe having competent civil servants is important for a strong American democracy. And 95% agree civil servants should be hired and promoted based on their merit rather than their political beliefs. Now, given what I've just said, Dr. Goldman, it seems to be contradictory. We trust civil servants, but we don't trust the government. Can you explain that sort of paradox?
Well, there's a term we have in psychiatry and psychology called cognitive dissonance. And this is a great example of that. This one is truly hard to explain. And the implications are obvious. How can you believe, as a former federal employee and American citizen, I truly believe in the civil service and their competence, and yet have so little trust in the government? The way it's possible to put these statistics in context is what part of the government people are talking about. Whether they're talking about the political parties, whether they're talking about elected officials, as opposed to the apolitical, nonpartisan civil service, those may be factors there. But I was struck, as you are, by the disconnect between these statistics.
Yeah, it just seems appalling that we have so little trust. Now, I understand that that's factoring in Congress and all parts of federal government, not just the federal agencies. And so that, I'm sure, will skew it a little bit. But then this wealth of support for civil servants, which are really the group of people who make the government run, the unsung heroes of the government, in my view, just seemed astounding that we're all about them, you know?
Well, again, maybe what we should do, Tom, is try and explain briefly and what exactly the civil service is. I mean, what
sure.
the parameters
that's a
are.
Good idea.
And again, I was a civil servant. I took, and again, let's make one thing absolutely clear, that when you go into federal service, whether you're in the military or non-military, you take the same oath. That is to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Correct.
I took that oath twice. First, when I went to work for the VA, and the second time when I joined the Food and Drug Administration. That is a life-altering oath. Even though I'm no longer in federal service, I consider myself bound by that oath as a private American citizen.
Sure.
And the fact that the non-political civil service, the non-political military, take an oath solely to the Constitution of the United States, not to an administration, not to an individual, not to a specific policy, is the essence of the federal civil service.
The fact that it, and again, maybe this is repetitive, but I just want our listeners to know, civil servants are there to make the government run, and their oath is to the Constitution. Their oath is not to President Biden or now current President Trump. It is not a political position. It is a service position. That's where they're called civil servants, because they provide service to all of us out here in America.
And again, and that's a very important point, which I'm not just going to reiterate, but deepen. When you join, for example, when I joined the FDA, I was not part of the Clinton administration. At the time, when I was at the FDA, I believe that was the case at that point, the only political appointee at the Food and Drug Administration was the commissioner, who, of course, was confirmed by Congress. All the rest of us, those of us who were in the professional, nonpartisan civil service and those in the commission corps, were not part of the administration. And this, you know, Tom, I think, again, with all the things going on, that people don't realize, and of course the misinformation about this, is that members of the civil service are not members of the administration if they are not political appointees. And there's historical reasons for this, because before there were changes made to, and again, you'd be, as an attorney, and a very good one, you'd be much more qualified to talk about this in one sense, that we don't have a spoils system in the United States, that every time an administration changes, the federal workers change based on who is in the White House. That is not the case in the United States. Has not been
people
the case.
People at the top change.
That is correct.
But the people who actually do the work, the people who actually get you your Social Security check or process your tax information or handle your Medicare claim, those people are not political appointments. They are there no matter what. And it's that stability, I think, that raises their public trust and confidence.
Absolutely.
Because they're always there.
And think about the implications of that. That's how you have career civil servants. That's how you have the senior executive service, which is based on the old British civil service. And thinking about that, since you're not a political appointee, and by the way, I'm not saying that those who are politically appointed do not do important jobs. Obviously, they do. However, they change. But the institutional memory, the technical knowledge, the fact that you continue And many people serve their entire careers at positions in the federal civil service. It means the continuity is there. Things don't stop from one administration to another. And there are presidents who have understood that. And you mentioned President Biden. He certainly understood that. And the reason why this is critical, as you're pointing out, is that the political appointees, for example, at a regulatory agency, such as the FDA, their position is as part of the administration. However, as an FDA employee, as a federal physician, my job at the Food and Drug Administration was to follow the law, follow the laws of regulation, follow the acts of Congress that were passed.
But not for a political reason. Follow the laws that would make Americans' lives better.
Yeah, I mean, when I joined the FDA, I was told that my job now was to help protect the public health of the citizens of the United States.
Right. You were looking at drugs and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
That either could be good or bad for the American public. You were the gatekeeper in some senses.
And by making it by it being administered by people who are not politically chosen, who are chosen, again, as 95% of the people apparently feel, based on their merit rather than by the way, let's talk about political police for a second, because there have been reports of people lately being asked who they voted for in the civil service. And I could tell you this flat out, Tom, that never occurred when I was in the civil service. Not only that, but if someone had asked me a question like that, I would refuse to have answered and would have immediately contacted someone in authority that someone had actually asked me that question. And we know where that has led the United States previously because we had a McCarthy era. And let me also point out that federal civil service appointees, not political appointees, they are not, again, I'm not suggesting that there is such a thing now, although we're hearing a lot about loyalty to an administration. Federal, nonpartisan civil servants sign no loyalty oath.
It's loyalty to the Constitution.
The Constitution is what you swear an oath to. No loyalty oath. There were loyalty oaths during the McCarthy era.
Oh, right.
And we know where that led. We also know that an aspect of that led to what was called the Lavender Scare, where gay and lesbian members of the government, for no reason other than their sexual orientation, were removed from the federal government by the thousands. This is American history. And if we don't learn from history, if we don't know what has happened in the past, and not just in countries that became dictatorships, we have our own history of aspects here. And I think it's vital that people realize that, because we know where things we're seeing happening now can and have led in the past.
I want to take a step back, if we could. And by the way, I'm talking to Dr. Stephen A. Goldman. He is a psychiatrist, author, historian. We're talking about federal employment, federal civil servants, and federal regulations. And that's where I want to go, Steve, if we could go back to regulations. People hear about regulations. Regulations are often demonized by politicians as being evil. I want you, as one who worked with regulations, talk about the importance, if you feel that they are important, the importance of regulations to the average American out there, our audience, the person listening to us. why are regulations important to them?
You know, Tom, that's a great question. And, you know, once a regulator, always a regulator, yeah, in a sense. Because what I've done as a private consultant is enable companies to adhere to regulations, particularly on medical product safety, which was my métier.
Was your what?
My métier.
Oh, okay.
The regulations that, again, let me make this clear. Regulatory agencies are empowered to put out regulations. But I want to make something also very clear. You know, Tom, we hear a lot about a deep state, a term that I never heard when I was in federal service. The process in the United States.
That's a McCarthy-esque term, by the way.
Yes, it is. And I never heard it when I was in federal service. Regulations are put out by regulatory agencies under authority of Congress and under their charter. The process is open. Regulations are not put out in the dark while the country's back is turned. That is not how that happens. When a new regulation, and by the way, not just regulations, but also draft guidances that are designed to enable, in the example of the Food and Drug Administration, for companies to carry out the spirit of the regulations, those announcements are posted in the Federal Register. Anybody in the United States can send in comments based on the draft regulation, the draft guidances. The agency that is putting out either the draft regulation or the draft guidances has to review every comment. And then as the process continues, they must address those comments. And many cases, and again, I've been honored to be involved with both drafting regulation and drafting guidances, that in that iterative process, you hear from the American public and often rethink some of the things that has been done based on the comments, and therefore the regulations, the guidances that enable people to comply with the regulations, and just not the regulations themselves, the spirit of the regulations, enables the system to work because the final versions have gone through different iterations with considerations as to how they'll be enforced, as to what the implications will be for the companies or other entities that are being regulated, and also for the American people. I think it's a marvelous system. I really do.
Let me see if I can simplify this even further, and check me if I'm incorrect. For our listeners out there, Congress passes laws. You know, sometimes, but that's the intent of Congress, to pass laws. Those laws then go to agencies in the federal government that provide regulations on how those laws are to be administered. Those regulations are to protect the American public and also advance the cause of the legislation. Though the agencies also then monitor the regulations to see if there are abuses in the private sector or other parts of government of the federal regulations. So it's not only a group that promulgates the regulations, but it's a group that polices the regulations.
That is
but
correct.
They can't do either unless there's some congressional authority.
That is correct. And because the regulatory agencies are in the executive branch of government, Congress is obviously the legislative branch, and then you have the third branch of government, you know, the judiciary, which, and again, they all work. Well, again, the judiciary can review cases brought on regulation. And by the way, let me make, and that, Tom, that was a very good summary. The agencies are not fully independent. They don't work independent of the rest of the government, even though the FDA and other, for example, health organizations such as the CDC and NIH, also within the Department of Health and Human Services, that there's always been an independence that's been part of that to enable those entities, like the EPA, like the FAA and others,
right,
to do their jobs. But none of those organizations pass the laws. That's the act of, that's the job of Congress. The regulations that are put out by regulatory agencies do have the force of law, with civil and in many cases criminal penalties for noncompliance. And you asked before how important all this is. That's how we have clean air, clean water. That's why the American system of aviation is among the safest in the world. That is why the regulation on nuclear power plants. I mean, you can, Tom, you can go up and down the list of the things that are regulated. And I do realize that there has been criticism of overregulation. I do understand that. But I want people to know, and I was there, I did this, and many of the people I work with are still there every day. At least I hope they'll still be there every day,
right,
given right, what we're seeing, to ensure to the degree possible. It's a, you know, it's a balancing act, Tom, like anything else.
Yeah.
Is what is the intent? And the, again, that's why I went into some detail, which I don't think I went overly detailed, hopefully, about how regulations and guidances are promulgated, how they're
right,
they're put out. They're not draconian edicts. They're things that are done with great care as to what the impact will be. And there are things that, you know, by law, by regulation, you must address when you put out a new proposed regulation.
But let me jump in. You're talking about politics in regulation, and
yes,
I want to advance that a little bit. I want our listeners to understand that a regulator regulates a policy neutrally. However, the head of an agency can tell regulators, spend more time regulating A and less time regulating B, put more emphasis on looking at A, put less emphasis at looking at B. If those decisions are political, they're political at the head of the agency, not at the federal worker level. Would that be correct?
Generally, yes. But I worked in the commissioner's office,
okay,
during a good majority of the time at FDA, because I was the medical director of MedWatch, which was a new initiative to both increase the number and quality of adverse event reporting on all medical products regulated by the FDA, with the exception of vaccines, because they have their own program, and also give out information about what the FDA does with the adverse event reports. And I'm very proud of the work my colleagues and I did at MedWatch, because the quality of reports clearly went up. I was also sent out to speak to the American people. And, you know, Tom, I know this is going to sound funny, but when they saw in a human being, a practicing physician, talk about what the reports, how they were processed, why they were so vital, the response was wonderful. It was marvelous.
It wasn't some machine or some computer spitting out
right,
regulation,
I mean, right,
or a report, right?
It's a fellow American citizen whose job they were paying for. Don't forget, I was on a federal payroll.
Right.
And so that, now in terms of the impact of the political leadership, Now, what you're saying is true up to a point, but I think there are variations from agency and organization to organizations as to what the goals are. I can tell you what FDA, given its huge remit, don't forget it regulates drugs, medical devices, biologicals, vaccines, cosmetics, you know, you name it, over-the-counter drugs, dietary supplements. You can't stop the work of all of those to just emphasize one aspect. That's not what happened. Now, there are priorities. And MedWatch was part of one of those priorities where drug safety was emphasized. You know, medical product safety was emphasized. That didn't mean the work stopped in everything else. And the second aspect I will point out, and again, I'm talking about my experience at the FDA, that the work of the professional civil service, that is the non-political civil service, went on as before. And that was really the remit of the professional staff that was there. When I say professional staff, physicians, pharmacologists, clinical pharmacologists.
Yeah, we aren't talking all clerical workers.
Yeah.
About some highly trained professional.
I mean, these
in
are
a particular area of science or medicine or whatever, right?
Yeah. And the people I work with, and again, many of whom are still there, they were remarkable. I mean, you sign on to work for the government because you believe in the system, because you believe in the need for oversight, for regulation. You believe that this system, this democracy, this republic, constitutional republic, serves the American people. Otherwise, why would you be in federal service? Because we know that the pay in federal service in many instances does not match what professionals can get outside of federal service. So there's reasons why you stay. There's reasons why you go there. Not everybody stays. I mean, I did not stay there for my entire career, but I had the tremendous experience of being in federal service twice and was able to utilize those skills as a consultant, as an educator, in other ways, as many others have done. So the intent of regulation is to level the playing field, is to ensure that companies that do comply, and so many of them do, and realize how important regulation is, no matter what the industry is, no matter what the circumstances are, buy into the belief in the regulatory system because people's lives depend on it. And I'm not being hyperbolic when I say that, because people's lives do depend on the application of just regulation.
Okay, so let me jump in on that. We've heard recently that the Trump administration has taken down health information from CDC and other websites. These orders, executive orders or mandates or whatever you want to call them, from the White House has gutted some of the public information to people. How do regulators justify that?
How do they justify it? They were ordered to. And
but seems to cut against everything that you've been saying.
Well, it does cut against
of the process of regulation,
that
and the necessity of regulation, and all of these sort of checks and balances within the regulatory system. Now to just get some edict on the top that totally undoes what you've done for a career seems to be just onerous.
Well, why do you think we are so many of us are appalled by many of the actions that have been taken in the space of, what, less than a month?
Yeah, about a month. Yeah.
You can look at, and by the way, I think some of the information on the websites has been,
replaced by some by court order and some just voluntarily.
Right. I mean, it has been reposted. I mean, I was at FDA when the FDA, website went up. And the number of hits that it got, this was when, the web was just coming into its own. We were thrilled at what we could do with a public website that could provide information to the American, not just to the American people, by the way. I got calls when I was at MedWatch. I got calls from regulators around the world about our website and about the information that we were able to post. And let me point out that who pays for the information that is posted by the CDC?
I assume I do as a taxpayer.
The American taxpayers pay for that. Let's be clear here. Federal employees do not own the data that they produce. That is owned by the American people. Just as what's in the National Archives is not owned by whatever administration is in the White House, that is the property of the American people. Same thing at the Library of Congress. They are in public domain. They belong to the American people. That is our property, if you will. So that when things are posted on government websites, that is for the furtherance of the American people, scientific, medical, and other knowledge, which hopefully will benefit the American people. That's why it goes up. That's why you have the MMWR, the Mobility Mortality Weekly Report from the CDC. That is why you have information that goes up. And, federal employees publish in the medical literature, but they are publishing those as part of their service as federal employees, and their work is part of the public domain information. I mean, I hope that is clear to the American people where the ownership is.
So I want to take you through not a hypothetical, a real situation, and I need your translation for me. Just recently, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been appointed as head of Health and Human Services, part of the Trump administration. Certainly a checkered past as it relates to medical information or medical issues. What exactly can he do that would change what the regulators do who are civil servants under him? Can you explain that in simple terms so our audience can understand?
Tom, as I'm sure you'll understand, I don't want to speculate.
Right. But hypothetically, anybody, whatever.
Well,
but the head of an agency, which is a political appointment, how can that change what the regulators, the civil servants, do?
Well, again, back to what I said before. I mean, the political appointees who head any of the regulatory agencies, health organizations, or any other, entity within the U.S. government, within the executive branch, that is the system. And, I served under three different, two congressionally confirmed commissioners and one who was acting. And that was within, two of the same administrations. They have a perfect right as the political heads, the political leaders of the organizations to determine the policy, because they're part of the administration. That is the system. The way the system has been working and is supposed to work is that that change in administration is not designed to change the overall mission of the regulatory agency or federal entity that is now under new management, if you will.
Right.
That is what has been the case.
But that's not what seems to be happening now.
Well, because you now have a new entity, DOG, which is not
DOGE, the Elon Musk group.
Yeah, the acronym standing for, it escapes me at the moment.
It's all right. People know what DOGE is, and certainly know Elon Musk is taking a saber to what should be a scalpel. But go ahead.
Well, let me point out that that entity is not a branch of government. There's three branches of government, and that separate organization is, unless you, I believe the argument is being made, it's under the executive.
Yeah, it's under the executive. At least that's the argument. You're right.
Well, you're the attorney, and I know that there's been a question as to its constitutionality. My point is that there is not just a tradition, but the whole essence of there being a federal civil service is that administrations change, but the work of the non-political civil service continues on behalf of the American public, no matter which administration is in power at the time. And this is something that is in, obviously in discussion now as to what happens if the guardrails that have been there, the way things have been done before, based not just on tradition but also on the law, if those change, what impact that could have.
Well, it seems to me, and this is a layperson out here, it seems to me that what's happening is that Trump and Musk want to get rid of hundreds of thousands of federal civil servants. And people out in the hinterlands are saying, oh, well, this reduces government, this is going to reduce costs. But the ultimate reason for eliminating these hundreds of thousands is also to replace them with people who are loyal politically to the agency heads and the president, as opposed to civil servants who are vowed to follow the Constitution. It's a total change of the characterization. Not just the elimination of jobs, but it's a change of the characterization of what a civil servant is under the Trump administration compared to what it has been under all previous administrations. Is that correct?
I think that's the impression we're getting. And by the way, it's not just in the regulatory agencies. We're watching what's happened with the Department of Justice.
Right.
And other entities. And this is of grave concern.
Well, talk to me about your concerns, because you've been there. I'm looking from the outside.
Well, I think I've expressed some of them already. you know, science
is science.
Well, but, you know, let's be clear. Within the FDA, we had very spirited discussions on scientific and medical issues.
Of course. And that's what makes good regulation.
Yeah. And we eventually came to consensus in what we felt was the right thing to do. That's why there's also a hierarchy within the FDA of review. And by the way, you know, the commissioner of the FDA is not the one who signs the approval letters. Let me point that out. You know, there's center directors, there's division directors, there's office directors. This is apolitical for a reason in terms of what you're asking about. And things such as Schedule F or other aspects of trying to replace non-political civil servants who are in their positions based on their skills, potentially with those who would not have those skills, is what could undo the system we have had that has enabled protection of the American public when it comes to their drugs, medical devices, the air we breathe, and other aspects.
I know you've said that it could all of this could present a clear and present danger to the population of the United States, and more importantly, you've said to me that this could be irreversible. That really seems dire to me. Can you explain the clear and present danger? I think you are, but why would it be irreversible?
Because we don't know how many people are going to leave federal service for one reason or another. We don't know what's going to happen over the coming few years in relation to the federal workforce. We don't know what the priorities are going to be in the near future as to how this government works. The unknown is significant here. But I think that what we know already is that the non-political federal civil service is being targeted. I mean, I don't think there's any, I don't think, you know, we pick up a newspaper every day.
Yeah.
Put it on the news.
The question under the guise of cost saving.
Which my understanding, I read a statistic, I think even today, that what the federal service is what, 1% of the American budget?
It's inconsequential.
It is inconsequential. And yet look at what service comes through that in terms of and by the way.
You get a big bang for your buck with that group, I'll tell you.
Let me point out, no one is saying that I'm aware of, and I'm certainly not saying this, that you cannot have more efficient government, that no one is saying that we shouldn't continually look at better ways of doing things, that we shouldn't continue to look at possible redundancies. And also, one thing that is pointed out, that federal employees can be removed under the civil service system
for
malfeasance.
Yeah, for cause, right.
For cause. But it's done under a system that protects both the federal workforce and the American people. That's why we have civil service laws. That's why there's union representation. And it seemed to work to enable people to join the federal government because they knew that if they did their jobs to benefit the American people, if they did their jobs to the best of their ability within the bounds of the law and within an administration's policies, that a federal civil servant who did his or her job as they were supposed to had no reason to fear removal or any effort made to lessen their ability to carry out the mission of the entity for whom they worked on behalf of the American people. And to see what is happening, as someone who greatly believes in this system, and I'm certainly not alone, that is why these issues are so important. That is why the American people need to know what's at stake when they hear about these things. And if 95% of the American people believe that those hired to a nonpartisan civil service should be hired on their merit rather than political beliefs, that is something that must be communicated by the American people.
Let's talk a little history here. Because you're a historian as well as a physician. And I just pick up things, bits and pieces here, where I read about this issue, that targeting civil servants has been part of the authoritarian playbook from beginning of time, perhaps. Can you give us some historical perspective of why all of this should concern mom and pop sitting in their home with their two kids running around?
Because we are the oldest constitutional democracy in the world. We've existed as an entity for 249 years. And to get to this point, there are people who have sacrificed a lot, including their lives, to have a system of government that enables the government to serve the people who elect them, to serve the people who depend upon a professional civil service, and who depend upon a judiciary that is independent and ensures that actions that are taken are within the Constitution. You can't have a system that is designed as the American constitutional system is, unless it's protected. And the protection of the apolitical civil service protects the American people in ways that maybe aren't so obvious, although we've been talking about this. It affects almost anything you can think of. And you know, don't forget the military are part of an apolitical system. I mean, this goes to the defense and safety of the United States. And again, I don't think, Tom, you and I are saying anything that is in any way exaggerated or hyperbolic. Would you agree?
I would agree. But I think the similarities between authoritarianism and fascist governments and what we're seeing is something that's people just either don't grapple with, they don't understand, they don't really believe. I think you and I are concerned, but I'm trying to get others to be concerned, and I need your help in doing that. How do people, you know, is there a historical precedent for getting rid of civil service? And
yes.
What does that mean?
Yes, there is. And again, I'm simply giving a historical precedent. That's one of the aspects that occurred between the Weimar Republic and what became the Third Reich. And it's not the only example of that, because when you remove, by any means, those who are sworn to uphold the law, who are sworn to carry out the dictates of the constitutionally mandated and approved systems under which governments work, we know from history where that can lead. And when it in the past, those who watched it happen found ways to think it was not going to happen, or felt it would pass,
or it didn't matter.
And those are also lessons of history. I can go back. I can give you, it's not exactly the analogy in the United States, but I'll give you the history of what happened in 1861, where the compromise at the Constitutional Convention in the United States enabled slavery to continue. And that bill came due in 1861, when finally those who believed, and eventually, as you know, that's the work I do, particularly
right.
In Civil War Reconstruction, that the North, and particularly the men, initially almost all white and eventually white and black, said that if this Union is worth saving, the slavery must be destroyed. The American people of the North and in border states who remain loyal said, we have to stop what has been destroying the United States from within, an evil institution of slavery. That's how it all started. We started to become the United States when slavery was destroyed, because someone, and as a group, people decided that something was terribly wrong that had to be changed. They didn't stand by and watch. That's not exactly what we're talking about, as you know, with we've seen in fascism in the past. But it is an example that I talk about in my lectures and others of what the American people have been capable of during our history, of standing for this system of government, the Freedom Riders. I mean, we can go up and down the line of standing up for what this country is supposed to stand for, and the potential of this country. And Evelyn Amaro said that a citizen of a republic cannot deny his or her responsibility or not accept responsibility for that result. He said that during the McCarthy era. And people paid a price during the McCarthy era. But the McCarthy era ended. There are no loyalty oaths as part of federal service. There's the constitutional oath as part of federal service. And there were reasons for that.
Okay, so we're running out of time, but I always want to give our experts, and you in particular, the last word. You know, what have we missed in our conversation? What did I not ask that maybe you wanted me to ask? Is there any final message that you want to get out to the American public?
The issues we talked about today are not a matter of political party or political beliefs. What we talked about today is about this country. What a constitutional republic is, why a professional, apolitical, federal civil service needs to be protected. Look at it as enlightened self-interest, because those federal workers are vital to the protection of the American people in so many ways. And I think that's the message that we're trying to get across.
Steve, thank you as always for joining us and enlightening us. Your presence is always welcome on this podcast. We appreciate you.
Always delighted to be here, Tom.
We've been talking today with Dr. Stephen A. Goldman. He's a psychiatrist, author, historian. Also, he spent a number of years at the FDA as a medical product safety and risk management expert and regulator. You can subscribe to Next Witness, Please on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and at the NPR podcast directory, also at your favorite podcast outlet. While you're there, not only subscribe, but you can rate and review us. We would appreciate it. If you have any questions or comments about our podcast, you can email them to me. You can do that at hodson@ohio.edu. That's Hodson, H-O-D-S-O-N, @ohio.edu. Also, if you have any topics you would like for us to cover in the future, please shoot us an email and we'll add your topic to our list. Next Witness, Please is produced through WOUB Public Media. Colin Cameron is our co-producer and audio engineer. Judge Gale and I will be back soon to give you more insights into the law. Our basic premise is you don't trust what you don't understand. So we're trying to elevate your understanding of the law and our legal systems. Until then, have a good day, everyone.